You are listening to the For the Bros Tech Podcast, episode 254. Apple should copy Instagram by copying Tesla.
Season 6, episode 254 of the Furler Bros Tech Podcast. Today is August the 7th, 2016. I'm Matthew Dean Furlow, and diving into the water for the first leg of the 4x4 is my brother, James Furlow.
Woohoo! You know, it's almost as if the Olympics are not happening if you don't have cable.
Yeah, I can understand that. Impression.
I opened up this article, Lifehacker article, that was like how to stream the Olympics online, even if you don't have cable. And their number one thing was you could go to NBC.com and stream them if you have cable. I was like, wait, that clickbait headline? I don't understand. That's like, no, I don't have cable. So I stopped reading. Maybe there's other stuff, but
I was gonna say, do they have other suggestions? But
I should check, because I was just so distraught over the fact that it was like number one thing. Oh, just go here and stream it if you have cable. I was like, yeah, wait, what?
Why would anybody click on this article if that was the headline and they have cable?
Okay, all right. I'm doing more. So you could use free Sling TV. All right, So Sling TV, that's $25 to get that. Let's see, the PlayStation Vue offers a 7-day free trial. How much is that normally? $40 a month. Okay. Let's see here. You could use a VPN to watch international Olympic coverage. Now we're getting into hackerspace.
Yeah.
Love it. Which I'm sure it has varying degrees of success to it. You can find the events you want to watch. That's not helpful. I mean, great. I can go online, figure out when they are. That's so essentially you can't. That's what I just read. Like there's no free option in the US unless you're willing to go VPN crazy and not, I guess.
That was NBC's goal. It's one of the reasons why they pay a bazillion and a half dollars to a...
I get it. And I mean, I don't know. I don't watch a ton of sports to begin with, so I can't believe I missed
the opportunity on that one. They don't spend a bazillion dollars, James. They spend a bazillion dollars.
That was good.
Forget about my game.
Man, yeah, you're slacking. That's funny. Have you been watching much?
Yeah, so I didn't watch the opening games. I recorded them because I am...
The ceremony, you mean, or like the games that happened before the opening ceremony?
Yeah, the opening ceremony.
Okay.
Which I'm kind of hit and miss on the opening ceremony. It's not the... Like, I know some people just, like, go bonkers. It's what they care about with the Olympics. But for me, it's like, it's cool, but it's not my... As long as I get a little John Williams opening ceremony music in my life around this time of year, that satisfies my opening ceremony like cravings. But I really like watching the actual events and stuff. And so, like yesterday evening, I went to yesterday day, I went to a housewarming that ended up. Hey, by the way, I have a little bit of an echo going on.
Oh yeah, you probably do. I'll fix it.
Yeah. Yeah, we went to
magically fixed on you.
But afterwards, we went to a couple of bars, and it was awesome because everybody had the Olympics going on, and it's just that time of night. They've got, you know, stuff.
Yeah, so, the delay is not that bad, so you can actually catch stuff.
And it was just, I don't know, it was fun watching the swimmers swim and the...
Oh, I would enjoy that. I see, and here's my thing. So this reminds me of... When I was, what was I doing? Oh, it was a Super Bowl and I was traveling. And so I was going to miss the game and I was like, whatever, no big deal. But then when going to the airport, they had the game on. And so I would catch however long it took me to walk by the TV.
Yeah.
You know, 15, 30 seconds of a game. And then when I did that, that's when I was like, oh man, I really wish I was on this scene right now. So I'm in that stage. You know, it's I'm sure it's either like dieting or any sort of abstinence type of thing that you have going on.
Yeah.
Where it's like, man, give me just a taste of it.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Tastes good. Yeah. I can't just have a taste. Yeah, I did manage to have my own little Olympics yesterday, though. Our church puts on an annual Olympics games for the middle and high school students on the beach. They call it Beach Olympics. Mm-hmm. And I went and helped out with that. So I'm extremely sore and tired today. That's a meet at the church and leave at 7 a.m., get back around 11 p.m. Those days. And you're just, you know, you're out on the beach and you're sunbeaten. I'm slightly sunburned. My feet definitely hurt. My whole body hurts. But yeah, so I got a little Olympic taste.
Gotcha.
But I haven't watched anything, so I'm okay.
Me too. I celebrated the opening ceremonies on Friday by continuing my marathon training. I ran 20 contiguous miles on Friday. It's actually not entirely true. I had a...
But you walked some.
Well, I actually ran 20 miles. They just weren't strictly contiguous. Because I got to... The trail that I run is really awesome because it's got a number of water fountains and bathrooms all along it. Yeah, it turns out that they don't open till 8 o'clock on a Friday. Oh. They open a little bit earlier on a Saturday. So I got to where I was like, oh, man, I need to use the restroom. Like really... need to use the restroom, and door was locked, and so I ran to the other side of the park. That one was locked too, and then at that point I was like, okay, I'm going to stop
emergency
mode. I'm going to stop my distance trackers. I'm now going to walk where I know a bathroom is, and then walk back and start my distance trackers again. I caught my breath. I did the full 20 miles. But I had like a 15-minute breath catch in the middle of there, which
and bio breaks. Yeah, that's important.
Exactly, bio break. Yeah, it was a long run though, man. I bet. Tired. I got done. I slept for like an hour and a half. Got up, had lunch, went back to sleep for another hour. went to bed at like 9 o'clock. It was pretty.
Yeah, that's kind of like marathon training right there, because that's going to happen the day of.
Yep. I did, thankfully, during that period I was awake, get to see the new Suicide Squad movie. Did you get to see that one?
I was super close to going, and then the people I was going to go with were like, can we go next week? I flipped tables. I was so upset. So I'm going to see it on Friday. So I was just like, and... For the record, this movie has been on the calendar with these people since it was first announced the movie was coming out. So I was more than a little peeved. I get it, traveling for work and whatever, but I'm like, dude, priorities. Yeah, talk to your boss.
Get it together.
Come on. You kidding me?
Yeah.
There are things more important than keeping your job.
Like keeping your friends happy. I will say this. I feel like I watched an entirely different movie than the critics.
This is two in a row for you.
Yeah, where I actually liked it and they didn't.
That's what I was talking with someone who was like, oh, I don't know, it might be bad. I was like, well, I don't know. They kind of missed it on Ghostbusters, which I still haven't. Oh my gosh, kids are lame for the for movie. Okay, let me clarify.
This is being recorded. They'll be able to hear this one day, James.
Yeah. For movie watching purposes.
Yes.
Very lame. Very lame.
I understand.
But it's probably more of a failure on our part to find a good babysitter than their fault for needing attention. But
always still. Needing attention and whatnot. Oh man.
It just kills me. Yeah. So like I said, I'm doing Suicide Squad on Friday and maybe I'll get lucky and catch up somewhere else too, but I doubt it. But anyways.
I saw the new Star Trek movie. Two Star Trek Beyond. But we saw it in this like barcode is what it was called. Like it and it's like a poor man's IMAX. They basically have like three screens that and two are like super angled. So you got the main screen and then right up against it there's these two that kind of like come out towards you. And then they have three separate projectors projecting on each scene. So most of the movie is like your normal widescreen type thing. And then for some of the shots, they'll just like they project extra content on the edges, and so like you get more of a like full immersion.
Like what do you mean by extra content?
Like you know, if it's a shot of the Starship Enterprise in space, like you'll just get more of the nebula on either side.
Okay.
I mean, like it's like full graphics and everything. I mean, like you could tell.
Oh,
like,
okay. It was not just like lighting.
Yeah, no, it was like, you know, you could tell some artists put quite a bit of time in expanding the shot so that you would get this full thing. But it was kind of lame.
Okay.
It was trying real hard.
I get it. Do we have to do the full IMAX thing, or can we just kind of expand certain scenes? I get the thought.
Yeah, and it was.
And the answer is no.
Yeah, it was. Okay. It was all right. I wouldn't. If somebody, let me put it to you this way: if somebody said, "Hey, I really want to go do this Barco thing. I really like it. Would you come with me?" I'd be like, "Yeah, that's fine."
Gotcha.
It didn't ruin the experience, and some scenes were, you know, a little bit better, but it's just interesting seeing them try to like. I'm one of the things I'm excited about for VR is just the movie going experience, because I think it's going to change that sort of thing and make some stuff easier and cooler. But
that's fair.
So yeah, but James, we're not here to talk about movies and Olympiads and beaches. This week, like every week, we are here to talk about technology and the continuing corporate opera. And by that, we mean the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course, the technology they are developing. But before we get into the heart of the show, James has got a short disclosure he wants to throw our way.
Yes, I founded and work for Hewlett-Packard Inc. No, it's just HP Inc. What am I doing? But I do not represent HPI or any of HPI's opinions. I also own part of Twitter, Etsy, and Lending Club.
I think technically I still own part of... I keep...
What happened to that commitment?
I don't know. Same thing that happened the week before. I didn't do it. I got distracted.
Pathetic. Come on, man.
I know.
You can't just say I'm going to do it and then not.
Okay, at this point, I'm kind of curious as to see what happens if I don't do it.
Oh, convenient.
I know, right? Okay. Look, hey, man, make your goals fit your abilities, okay?
I'm just kind of,
yeah, like I said, I'm just kind of curious what happens next if I just ignore this. For those of you who are new to the show and don't know what I'm talking about, I bought a share of Skull Candy. Skull Candy got bought by Incognito, Incredulo, something like that. Curio. Who did it get bought by? Doesn't matter. They got bought by somebody. But now Robinhood, the app that we buy our stocks through, is like, yo, what do you want us to do with your share? You want your money back? Do you want to buy a share of this bigger company? You got to help me out. And I'm getting all this paperwork, and they're like sending these urgent mailers. And I'm like, I don't care. I don't know. What happens here? What's next, guys? So
I'll take the default.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I'll let you decide. Chill problem.
Is this part of the issue that the other company's stock price is a different price?
I think that's the problem. Is that it's not a straight. I think it's like I think my choices are pretty simple, actually. It's either I take the cash value that they're paying for the share, or I add the value of the new and get I'm pretty sure that's what happens, but I don't actually, I pay the difference, but I don't know. So anyways, yeah.
Okay.
That share is worth $6, by the way, which is, I think, got to be driving Robinhood crazy. It's $6. We have a fiduciary responsibility to take this seriously, but it's $6. Don't do this to us. We've already spent $10 on all the mailing stuff.
Seriously.
But yeah, so that's my disclosure. Yeah, so if you want to follow us throughout the week, this next week's going to be a good week to be following me, too, as I'm going to be going to Boston, Massachusetts, and Portland, Maine as well. Very excited. But I'm going to be on Twitter and Instagram, hopefully sharing pictures of me at a Red Sox versus the Yankees game and things like that. My Twitter is at Matthew D. Furlow. My Instagram is nextwiggin4, nextwiggin, number 4. I'll add things to my stories.
Will you?
I will.
Okay.
Now that I was
cool.
And that is a lot easier to do than to figure out what to do with my stocks. I'll actually do it.
Fair enough. You could sense that questioning in my head, in my comments, huh? Really? Okay. Trust you zero right now. Sweet. I am James Furlow on Twitter, Instagram.com, pretty much everywhere.
Nice. I like it. If you want to get more about the show, all the articles that we talk about today, you want to read more, dig deeper, take a deep dive, investigate further, whatever. You can do all that at furlowbros.com. That is the website. We'll have all the links and articles that we talk about, any audio clips, videos as well. If you want to subscribe to the podcast or look at their YouTube channel, whatever. Whatever is your fancy, it's all there. Also, you can sign up for our weekly newsletter, or everything I just described is delivered directly to your email box, but with the convenience of not going to our website. And yeah, and if you're keen on supporting us, it would be awesome. You can check out our Patreon as well.
Sweet, awesome. All right, you're up first.
Cool. So, have you heard about Pokemon Go?
That involves little pieces that you drive around on, right?
Something like that. Yeah, so it's been Pokemon Go has taken the world by storm, and they pushed out a big update this last week where they ruined the game by most accounts. They got rid of some features that were they basically decided to kill anything that was buggy. And so like they got rid of the low power mode, which is driving a lot of people nuts. They claim they're going to bring that back. They also shut down a lot of the third party applications that were illegally using their API.
It's a game.
I know. It's crazy because it's actually technically a federal crime what people were doing.
Sure.
And
I'm sure it technically is.
Well, but see, you say sure it technically is, but like people could like go to federal jail over that. I'm not sure that it should rise to that level, but you know, when the laws are written that way, that's what it is. But so anyways, what's interesting about that is that Niantic, the company that actually programmed the game and runs the service and everything. They claim that the third-party servers that were just basically what those were doing, if you don't know, is the third parties were pulling the servers, trying to figure out where every Pokemon is on planet Earth. And then you could go to their website and they'd have a map and they'd have all the locations of the different Pokemon near you. So you could go out and hunt specifically for Pokemon. And Niantic claimed that they were getting way more traffic than they should have been as a result of those third parties. And that was what was preventing their servers from being able to work properly people that were creating these things. And, you know,
I hate to be this way. Their servers were slow day one.
I know. I know.
I don't think it was.
I know. It's a convenient excuse. I agree. But they were saying one of the biggest issues is that, that they were like, you know, we built this game and, it's not playing properly, and they were so they wanted to shut these all down. And the other problem is they viewed that as cheating, quote unquote, that if people could go out and just walk to precisely where the Pokemon that they want was, which I'm kind of like, dude, it's a game.
Yeah, exactly.
Hello, Niantic.
Well, people are playing it. Relax.
Yeah, I know. People are making tons of money. Why would you, you know, and their whole thing is all people are going to cheat and stuff. And you're like, or it's cheating. It makes it non-competitive. I'm like, yeah, but yeah, relax. You gotta calm down. Anyways, so they cracked down on all of this. But what I think is really interesting is that, like I said, this is what these people were doing is technically illegal. And you can't just, like, it's not like any of this stuff was published. Like, you had to go in and grab all of these APIs so you could build these third-party applications. And this is something that anybody that has a web service, web-based service, deals with, whether it's Facebook or Instagram or Snapchat or Google or YouTube or Niantic and Pokemon. So most of these other companies don't have third-party services that replicate their stuff. So how do these other companies do it? Well, they use really a pretty clever security stuff to verify that this is our app installed on the device that we're confident of. And they just use good security stuff. And turned out this week that I think we figured out why Niantic is having a hard time locking down the security and reliability of their system. Yeah. And it begins at the top in every situation. You had to have a CEO who's focused on the right things. And so this week, Pokemon Go, the CEO of Niantic, creator of Pokemon Go, got his Twitter hacked.
Oops.
And turns out his password that he was using to secure his Twitter was no pass. NOPASS. All lowercase.
Beautiful.
Yeah. This is not a guy that has high security as a priority in his life.
Probably does not have tape over his laptop camera.
Yeah. That's real embarrassing. Yeah.
No pass? Really?
Yeah.
Come on.
I get it. You're a businessman and you're looking at Twitter trying to understand, like, I'm just engaged in, you don't take it that seriously. And so you don't think about it really. But that's like the number one thing that hackers go after to embarrass people. You'd think, I'm really surprised. I'm really surprised that you could get to that level in any industry and think that that's okay. And yet at the same time, just looking at kind of the struggles that Pokemon Go has had and how unstable the application is and how many security issues they're having, I'm really not that surprised that the head of their organization turns out doesn't
have that as a priority.
Yeah, in his life in general. So I don't know. I just no pass. Oh my gosh. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's the sort of password that an idiot would have on their luggage. Hey, that's the combination for my luggage. Spaceballs. What a great movie.
So true too.
Yeah.
Timeless.
I feel like, you know, and it's funny, I didn't even realize that till just now, but that's like a perfect metaphor for situation.
Good
movie.
Yeah.
I should go watch that movie again.
That is a good one. Pokemon Go CEO. Crazy. Mm-hmm. Well, clearly Pokemon has had an impact on our society, and they're not the only ones. Mm. Kickstarter has also had an impact. And so this week they had a blog post based on a new study by the University of Pennsylvania that said, took a comprehensive look at some of the things that Kickstarter has enabled, which is kind of cool. So here's just a smattering of stuff. So apparently what they found is that through people getting funded, like illustrators, editors, musicians, and stuff like that, they have been able to keep going with their projects.
That's cool.
And so apparently, or however you want to talk about it, because of these projects, they've employed approximately 283,000 people temporarily, and 29,600 of them are now full-time creative people because of their Kickstarter projects.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Pretty cool. Let's see here. Some other neat stuff. Over almost 9,000 companies have gotten their start through Kickstarter. And so there was some big ones that we know about, like Palmer Luckey's Oculus. Mm. There's Radiotopia. There's Goldiebox. There's Pebble. And Kazoo. and then one called Chicken Town, which is a London-based restaurant and social enterprise committed to serving healthy, locally sourced meals while paying off its staff a living wage. So you got that too. Apparently, how about this for crazy? 82% of the organizations created through Kickstarter are still in operation today.
Wow,
that's impressive.
That's really impressive.
Yeah. This one's neat too. Every dollar pledged to a successfully funded project resulted in $2.46 in additional revenue for the creator. So essentially they can claim, oh yeah, we've helped to create $5.3 billion in additional economic activity.
Man.
Which is pretty neat.
That's a good company.
And then they talk about how it's good for individuals. 37% say the Kickstarter project helped them advance in their careers. 21% reported in receiving an increase in annual earnings. 19% said they found a new job opportunity as a result of their project. And 7% said their project helped them successfully switch careers. So, and we're talking filmmakers, musicians, video game creators, authors, and journalists. Journalists reported that their Kickstarter project gave them, yeah, I guess journalists too. So, yeah, just some cool stats. Kickstarter remains a pretty cool platform. That's just, I think they've moved beyond the, well, this is new and interesting and where's it going to go, to like, no, this is a thing.
Yeah.
And it's just part of what we do now. And it's not, it's notable in the fact of how unnotable it is now, which is neat.
Yeah. There are still articles that show up regularly about new Kickstarter projects, but there's no new articles about Kickstarter in particular, you know, with the exception of this one. It's not like,
which was their own,
right? Exactly. It's they're now a mainstay and it's cool. So this always brings me back to the same question, James: what are we going to kickstart?
Kickstart
something. I want to so bad. I've started talking to friends, just like chatting and whatever. And you know, because I don't know, I feel like we're all,
because that's what you do. You chat with
exactly.
Friends. Get it?
We should start a social network.
For pets.
Exactly. I feel like we're all kind of at this point where a lot of us are thinking, yeah, you know, I could see another job coming around. And I've started throwing out anytime somebody like.
Mostly you, for the record.
Well, I know, but...
Oh, you and your friends that you were chatting with. I'm with you.
Yeah, there we go.
I'm keeping up with your story.
They're all kind of aware that I'm in the market, as it were, as much as...
Facebook, if you're listening.
Get on it.
Google.
Would
you work for Microsoft, given the opportunity?
Yeah, at this point.
Up in Redmond.
I'd think about it.
Just
you know
gotcha.
What? I'd think about it. Honestly, I have a price. And I'm sure it's one that Microsoft could meet for a level of...
Man, I really want to know what it is, but we'll talk later.
All right. yeah, it's not that high, honestly. I'm really broke right now. What was I going to say? Something interesting.
You look in the chain.
Oh yeah,
I
keep talking to my friends, and I'm like, "Hey guys, like, anytime they're like, yeah, I'm thinking about this, I will pitch the idea of like, we should start a company together." Be like, "What? Yeah, I don't know. We'll do something. We'll make something. Let's make a product. Let's go into business. Let's start a small business together, guys." Which I get roundly rejected. Which I'm not exactly sure why. It's just maybe it's me. I think a lot of these guys.
Yeah, there's something they don't want to tell you.
I went to college with a lot of these guys, so they know what my study. They haven't seen me work as an actual employee for the last couple of years. They've only seen me with my studying habits. They're like, Furlough came up with this good idea. We should start a company, but just don't tell Furlough we're doing it.
How ticked would you be if that happened? Would you start suing people like the Winklevoss twins?
Probably.
Just left and right. This was my idea.
This is my idea to start a company where we'd figure out what we would do later. but I keep coming back to that. Oftentimes as part of the pitch, I'll be like, dude, all we have to do is come up with a product and then we can kickstart it. We can be on our way, man. We'll bankroll that Kickstarter into proof of desirability in the market. we'll raise funds with a VC to expand our operations. Then like 2 or 3 years, we'll have like a product line, like 4 or 5 different products.
Why are you giving them the roadmap? You got just, that's why no one's saying yes.
Why?
You're just like, here's exactly how you do it. Let me just tell you, are you writing this down?
Oh, I'm trying to get my friends excited to quit their jobs.
To be honest, it wasn't like, you're like, okay, step one, idea. Step two, Kickstarter. Step three, we make it. Step four, we prove it. Step five. And it's like, well, we're on 15 steps now. We're still not retired. I don't understand.
Well, the thing is,
you gotta be like the onion. We're like, look, making this thing, like, it's just 2 steps. That's it. You come up with the idea, and then you make it. I've already got the idea, so we're 50% of the way done.
Right.
All we need is to come up and make it.
Yeah, I definitely feel like that's such a good onion skit. This is the thing. I'm trying to pitch these guys on the idea of you don't need to work for a large corporation for the rest of your life, man. Expand your mind, free yourself, be self-employed.
Yeah.
Well, and that's,
they should get on with the current.
That's what
trend.
I'm telling them. I'm like trying to be like, we can make, that was really high pitched. I would like, we can do this, man. we can build a company together. Like, and I'm always like, why don't we just this? I realize maybe this is a terrible idea, but it doesn't feel like a terrible idea. But why don't like 5 of us who are all kind of looking for a new job just spitball the best idea we can come up with?
Yeah. Create a little mini incubator.
Exactly. Incubator. We're all engineers.
I love it.
We're all in most of.
Wait, here's what you do. Here's a brilliant idea. Kickstart an idea to kickstart an idea.
That's. I feel like that's already been done and very well. I'm pretty probably. Sure there's Kickstarter videos. We're having a Kickstarter to help us figure out what our Kickstarter project's going to be.
that does totally sound like
it. I'm sure that exists. But
if not The Onion, somewhere else.
Yeah. I'm going to.
By the way, dude, you should come join my startup. I literally, my other co-founder yesterday was like, we should, I think we should do a drone something or other. I was like, yes, about time. Bring it on board. You should do it.
I hate to be this way, James, but you're breaking up a little bit. And I.
Well, you sound fine. So. Mm. I'll lower my quality.
I appreciate that.
Yes.
What was it? Were you doing a drone thing? Sorry.
Yeah. That's what he was recommending. He was like, we should get like a drone thing to do this particular operation. I'm like, yeah, brilliant idea.
Yeah.
I only mentioned it like a month ago. So I gotcha. Yeah. I'm with you. I feel like Kickstarter's this thing that has some cool opportunities, but I mean, obviously coming up with the ideas is difficult.
Yeah, you see, the thing is, we keep trying to come up with like brilliant ideas. I'm trying to come up with a good enough idea to have a successful Kickstarter and hire somebody who's really good at making videos, which I know some people, and by hire them, I mean beg them to do it for nearly free.
Yeah.
On the future promise of equity. And
so you just kind of come up with that mediocre idea. I feel like you listen to some of our previous shows. We got some.
I know, that's the worst part. See, what I'm trying to get them to buy in. See, this is my real secret, James. I'm trying to get my friends to buy into the idea of quitting their jobs and like starting the company with me. And we'll, quote, all work together to come up with an idea, which what I really mean is we'll all just agree that one of my ideas are really good. And we'll all make that happen.
See, your approach is a little wrong. You have to just come up with the idea, become passionate about it, and get them on board.
Yes.
That's what you got.
Yes, I agree. But we're not here to give away all my ideas, James. Because you know what happens when you throw your ideas out there to the ether? Sometimes they get stolen. No.
Ah, okay. Yes.
By Instagram.
Yes. By Instagram.
So this week, Instagram announced a new feature, never before seen by anybody, completely novel.
On Instagram.
Yeah.
On Instagram.
Called Stories.
Stories.
Which, yeah, see if this sounds familiar. Basically what happens, James, is you will take photos or videos with Instagram, and you've always done. And then when you post them, they'll post to a temporary personal timeline where people can look through them and like flip through these things relatively quickly. And we're going to call this mm-hmm. as a story, and it sort of updates over time. These photos, videos are there, and then they delete eventually. And
okay.
Yes. Does that sound
let me ask some clarifying questions before I think it might, just to make sure. So I know that typically Instagram has, you know, square photos or whatever. So are these those kind of photos or are these full screen photos?
These are full screen photos. They take up everything.
Okay. Can you like maybe annotate on them?
Yeah, you can draw and type stuff and all sorts of stuff.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. Yeah, I guess if you put it that way, there may be another product or app out there that is made by someone who you loathe.
I don't loathe them. I loathe their CEO.
Yeah. Oh, fair enough. Fair enough. So, yeah, sounds like Snapchat.
Yeah. It's exactly Snapchat. I am flipping through my Instagram right now because I open it up and this is I get super distracted all of a sudden as I see a bunch of my friends in tuxes and stuff, and
are you just realizing you didn't get invited to a wedding?
Yeah, I didn't get invited to a wedding, and I'm trying to figure out like,
dude, that's
somebody
tough.
Got married in my group of friends, and I don't have any idea who it is.
Don't you love social networks?
Yeah, this is brutal. Somebody was like, it's one thing when you know a friend's getting married and you don't get the invite. It's like, yeah, that's fine, man. Hey, congratulations. I get it. You got limited spots. You invited all of my our mutual friends, but you didn't invite me, but that's fine. But then not even realize that they're getting married. Listen, talk about this for a little while, James.
Okay. So Snapchat is allowing people to have all sorts of epiphanies about their life and their social status, or lack thereof, apparently. All right. So while Matthew's figuring out why he's not invited to a certain wedding, so it's almost exactly like what Instagram has. You take a picture, full screen, you put it on there, and then when you sign in, up at the top, there's little bubbles or circles, and you tap on that, and those are different users who have information. So, like right now, for me, the Timbers FC, which is a soccer stuff, they've got, dude, it's like their entire screen is full of them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 different photos and video things right now. But thankfully, it's not clogging up my feed. And in 24 hours, all of these things will be gone. And so, so I can watch it. Now, what's cool about it is I can pause it if I wanted to. I can replay it if I wanted to just by tapping go left. I can fast forward if I want to, which is pretty nice. And by the way, Timbers did really well. So this fun video to watch.
Okay. Okay.
And then I can forward to another user if I wanted. And then when I'm done, boom, close it. I'm back to my normal curated feed. So one of the things that happened with Instagram was when it first got started, it was really about post the stuff that you want, filter it up so it doesn't have to be absolutely perfect, and the filter kind of makes it special. But then over time, what they found was people would self-censor. And they started chasing likes or hearts or whatever they are, hearts and comments. And so they were like, we're just going to put the best of the best on here, and that's it. And it especially became true once you could import from your camera roll. Because I think when it originally started, you couldn't do that. And so you were kind of like, nope, take the picture and post it. Very much like Snapchat. So once people started filtering it out, it became an issue. To the point where there are teens who, if they don't get a certain number of likes, will actually delete the photo. They just get rid of it altogether. And so like, no, we don't want that. We want to enable people to keep sharing. The other thing that apparently a lot of teens do is they will set up two accounts. They'll have their official account that's public and has all this stuff, but then they have a private account, which is just for their friends, where they can share and do goofy stuff, and they really don't care about what the photos are on there. So they were already like, people are messing with our product anyways, and so we're going to figure out a way to make it so that they can use it. And instead of trying to innovate, whiteboard style, they went, well, Snapchat has this thing going on that's pretty cool. Our parent company, the Book of Face, is not really shy about straight up copying them. So let's do that too. And it's super funny when the Instagram CEO, Kevin Systrom, was asked about it. They go, so this is kind of like Snapchat, right? He goes, yes, it's exactly like that.
Well, this is what's so brilliant about it. And I actually think it's really interesting because usually we come into these situations when somebody like completely rips off other people's ideas. It's so common that it happens frequently. But a lot of times people will try to be like coy about it. Like, no, this is new. This is better. Whereas this isn't the same thing. Very, we're not doing what they're doing. But the Instagram CEO's argument here is an interesting one in that basically he's saying, like, Snapchat is saying, we developed this one core product that is the news – or that is – sorry, not news feed. That is my story, and it is a product that is synonymous with Snapchat. It is a Snapchat product. And Instagram's coming in and saying, look, story – is a mechanism for displaying information, a lot like a feed. And it's this more generalized way of giving people access to just like the Twitter feed versus the Facebook feed versus the Instagram feed. They're like, and Instagram saying story is kind of like a news feed where it has a particular format. It has particular things that people understand, but it's a generic, it's a generic way of doing that. It's not tied to a particular platform. So we're just implementing the Instagram story, sort of like anybody could do this. And Instagram sitting there and Snapchat sitting there saying, wait a second. We were under the impression that this wasn't a generic way of displaying information. We thought this was very unique to our platform. Nobody else has it. What are you talking about?
Such a good spin on it, and so brilliantly done. I don't know. I agree with you. I think that was so well done. And it's one of those where I think too, like given the normal answers, we all would be like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, it was. That's probably the thing I'm most impressed about by this is the fact that they're like, able to like his answer here was so just well thought out in that it kind of preempted a lot of the normal conversations. Like,
yeah, I mean, you could tell he thought about it.
Yeah,
and I mean, clearly they've been building it for a while, and he's been wrestling with, which is smart on his part of going, I'm going to get this question. I know what we're doing. How do I answer this? It'd be interesting to see when he came to this answer, or epiphany, or whatever you want to call it. Was this what enabled him to give the green light to the project, or did it come afterwards where he was wrestling with the man? This is really starting to look like what they're doing.
Yeah. Well, truth be told, Snapchat's never been above – Instagram, the company we're talking about, has never been above stealing ideas. Facebook,
for that matter.
Facebook definitely is shameless about just recreating entire product categories and saying, cloning Snapchats, cloning Instagram, for example, before they finally bought Instagram. So Facebook does it all the time and did it to Instagram. They tried to copy and paste their app into Facebook Photos before they bought Instagram. And so Instagram has been on the other side of that, and they know that, oh, we need this answer. But at the same time, it's not like they developed the idea of filters. We're going to build a really simple camera app that has filters and shares. Like, no, they just did it a little bit better than everybody else. And
Like I said, we're putting it together in our own way with our own spin. That's all. Nothing right. special.
And I have a feeling that internally they might have had this answer ready to go a couple of products ago, honestly. But I have a feeling that that it was one of those things where in the initial planning meeting, somebody threw this out there and just said, look, we'll just say that stories is a generic thing, like a news feed. And everybody was like, no, that's not going to work. But we'll just rip it off and we'll make up some excuse later. And as time went on, they just sort of settled into that. You know, honestly, that kind of works as an argument. Just change how people associate it. And the best part about this, and I think one of the reasons why it's such a great line of attack, is that it not only are you replicating the features of this other product, but you're making the company seem uninnovative because they're like, oh, it's just this generic form of communication. It's not this new novel form of a new novel product unique to their platform. And I don't know. It's from a branding perspective and trying to build up Instagram as this really reliable big time thing and kind of diminish the gloss on Snapchat. That's a pretty good response. Very clever.
Yeah. I think it's one too, that it doesn't burn any bridges. It'd be hard for Snapchat. I would be hard for them to get upset about it or indignant, at least. I mean, they can be upset about it.
But yeah.
To be publicly indignant, which who knows, your best friend, Evan May.
Right.
Be that guy. Well, it's Steve Jobs would.
Yeah, I know. And I think just as importantly, now
that would be the Samsung argument, right?
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say, is I think Snapchat is now in this really weird position of they created stories. Now they know it. It's their product. They could go and try to sue Instagram at this point. But Instagram is an enormous company in its own right, not to mention the fact that it's a subsidiary of Facebook. They've got a war chest. They can go to court with it. And that's going to be the argument that they're making. And they're going to force non-technical people, you know, a jury of their quote unquote peers, decide whether stories is a generic form of a newsfeed or not. And Snapchat is going to be in this place of, well, we could sue for our intellectual property, but they're going to argue that it should be available for general use. And it's going to be a gnarly battle. And by the time they win or lose, everybody's going to be moving on to the next, you know, iteration of their app and the next product thing. And it's like, they just completely preempted that. Like, I could still see a lawsuit coming all of this, but now Snapchat knows this is the argument they're going to make, and it's going to take us millions and millions and millions of dollars and years to prove that they stole our design. And by the time we prove it, who knows if people are even going to still be using stories or if we're going to be on to some new form of communication, which, you know, given the pace of all this, that's probably the answer. So would it be even worth suing over?
Yeah, I don't know. And I mean, and Snapchat's biggest problem, unlike Apple's, was they don't have billions and billions of dollars to just, like, yeah, whatever, go to war.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're sending a message that way. And our hope is to distract their CEO for 8 hours a week. And that's all we need.
Right, yeah.
And I don't know, right? This is, I mean, we hear about this game happens all the time. Man, it's just fascinating. I don't know. I kind of like it.
I
Ballsy
do.
Move, that's for sure.
I definitely like it. I'm a big fan of it. But that's not the only thing that happened in the social media world this week. We also had a little more with Snapchat. They officially signed a deal with the National Football League, where NFL is going to create content specifically for Snapchat. They're going to have their own, like, news feed, story feed thing. I don't know.
So the NFL's figured out social.
And that's what they're
telling me?
That's what they're hoping for.
You want to bet that's not true.
Yeah, seems.
Because this gets back to our conversation we had. Well, geez, I don't know. Middle of the basketball season, talking about how basketball gets and encourages social.
Right.
And it's like, and the NFL continues to be dumb.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure a better way to articulate that. But I'm way too tired from yesterday to come up with a better way to articulate it. I don't know. I guess here's what I'm envisioning. They're going to have a channel just like all the other channels, and I haven't read it, so I don't actually know, but they're going to have a channel and it's going to have highlight videos and some stories about either teams or potential players, whatever the current news is. It's not going to have anything scandal wise on there. It's all going to be positive and awesome, and it's going to be all corporate jargon-esque.
Yeah. Well,
what am I doing?
Don't forget about the 32 custom geo filters that will, you know, associate with your team and league. Yeah, they're also going to do advertising through it, which is just going to make it swell.
That's not great. Okay.
The league will still have a daily presence on Snapchat, with more official NFL media content around the current news, trending topics, and other events.
See, if they were smart,
scouting combine.
Again, they're not. They need to take a risk. Imagine if you had, I don't know the way to say this, but like official NFL users, like if you're a coach, if you're a player, if you're maybe even a broadcaster for them, I don't know. Your stuff goes into an NFL pot and people like stories, I guess.
Yeah.
And so you could have any player. They come on and do it if they opt in, I guess. I don't know. It's, you know, whatever. Details. You can then get their thing. And maybe there's even a cool section, which I know they don't search out people or whatever, but they make it a way for you to find your favorite players and stuff. Kind of where ESPN is like, okay, here's the league. Here's your team. And maybe you could find players who are on it. I don't know. Obviously, there's a risk there. But that's part of the fun, because fans connect with players.
Right.
And it's something that I don't think the NFL has figured out yet.
Right. It doesn't feel like the sort of thing. So to me, the advantage of social media always is, like you said, it's the ability to connect. Why is it that people who like Twitter, why do they like Twitter? It's because you can follow directly these giant celebrities, right, who actually oftentimes write their own tweets. And when you comment to them, they comment back. Or at least their PR team is very good at making it seem like you're communicating directly with the media
persona. For athletes, I've got to imagine 99.9% of the time it's the athlete.
Right.
For some bigger-time celebs, okay, maybe not.
Yeah, and probably. And sometimes presidential candidates are in charge of their own, you know, Twitter,
sometimes,
too.
Sometimes,
and
yes.
And we get this – but we get – the thing is it's that value of connectivity, which is awesome. And I would say this, that I think where this fails is going to be really – it's a different place that you have to go to watch more NFL content. That's going to be a real falling short of what it could be. If – and it sounds like this is kind of what they're doing. If they make it a digital meeting ground for fans to communicate with custom content based around their actual team. So, for example, I've decided I'm announcing this in public today. I'm pretty sure I'm going to buy a Raiders hat. Kind of over being a Niners fan this
Whoa.
Season. I've stuck it through.
Whoa!
Through the worst of times.
Are you sure?
I've put up with this team when they were horrible. But they now.
What's going on? Are you feeling all
right? They have They have more criminals and just despicable people on that team than any other NFL team. And I can put up with rooting for scumbags when they're good. I can put up rooting for good guys when they're bad, but can't do both at the same time.
So the Raiders?
Well, yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I feel like there's other California teams.
Okay. I'm not 100% sure. All I'm saying is I'm pretty sure I'm done with the Niners this
season.
Really
think about this.
I can't do the Niners this season. I just
can't. That's fine.
I can't put my heart behind it. I gotta find another team.
Okay. So I guess one of the nice parts about them is they're not rivals, because I was going to say you could go a little bit further north.
No.
That's what I get.
Oh, my. No. 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 Absolutely okay. Not.
Okay. Maybe look south. I don't know. There's nothing inspiring about the Chargers.
Chargers, they got good colors, I'll say. Just very much their costume combination is nice. Yeah.
I was Broncos. I kind of did the Broncos thing last year.
That's kind of – maybe I got to find a
– You got to find a nice AFC team. That's what you got to find.
Yeah. Maybe that's it.
Dude, which I don't know. Maybe the Raiders are AFC.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. I know. Yeah.
Raiders.
I know. I've been wrestling with this, James, for years.
Why don't you join my boat and just say, jump the shark? I'm not rooting for anybody.
No, see, well, okay, that does bring me to an interesting point, because we've been kind of arguing that both Snapchat and the NFL may have peaked.
Yeah, maybe this is a combination of Kmart and Sears right here.
I kind of feel that's honestly how I thought about it when
I first read it.
I was like, you know, maybe we're completely off base here, but I just get the feeling that this is the lamest deal I've ever heard. Like, I'm trying to come up with a positive spin on this, where, and this is the example I was going to get, where you get fans who all are adding to the Raiders story on game day, and you kind of like, and you can be watching the game and watching what other fans are doing in for your particular team, and so there's this sort of digital connectivity that all has to do with this one timeline that's going on. Like, I could see that actually be kind of fun and interesting, and a, you know, basically what they do with concerts, right? Where concerts have a unique theme and content for the particular concert that all the different music fans contribute to, and then you can kind of see what everybody else is having, you know, on the fly. That's a pretty clever way of doing it, and I think if they do that, that would be good. But there's the same part of me that's like, yeah, but it's just not the most exciting set of companies getting together right now. I realize that they're both huge and they should be exciting, but I just somehow, I'm not thrilled by it.
This strikes me. I mean, seriously, there's nothing innovative or exciting about it.
Yeah.
It's that classic bland corporate, oh, here's an opportunity for us to make some money.
Yeah, it's synergy. It's
that's
sort
what's
of thing,
driving it.
It's the sort of thing where the big pitch to this was a bunch of people, a bunch of sales guys in suits were talking about synergy.
Yes.
Think about the synergy when we bring the NFL.
They're like,
and
think
Snapchat
about the $32
together.
Billion dollars we'll make.
Exactly. Which, you know, I get it. Like, you know,
it's probably a million.
When you're,
million.
Yeah, when you're on top, make as much money as you can. Sure, go for it. But I just, like you said, there doesn't feel like there's anything particularly innovative about this and exciting, and really wants me to draw
just like
me
football
in.
Itself.
That being said, there is a company in the social
can you
media.
Just not go for the Raiders. I just. I mean, I don't even care. That's the worst part.
I know.
And I'm just, you saying it, just, I'm like, that's going to be a soulless, like, you're going to hate it. I don't want to hear you complain about being a Raiders fan. I think is my, I just feel bad for you. I'm sorry, man.
I know, this is what the Niners have brought me to, James. This is where I'm at.
I'm sorry. Okay, I need to try to move on. It's so hard to do, though. It's such a, you know how like you got distracted with the fact that you were not invited to a wedding?
Oh, did I tell you I figured that out when I was looking at it? It was three separate weddings.
Oh.
Yeah. I don't know any of them that were getting married. It was just a weird, like, weird coincidence that a bunch of my friends went to three separate weddings that I had nothing to do with.
At the same time.
I feel better about it.
Cool. Yeah, I don't feel better about your Raider decision yet, but... Well, I have a feeling you'll figure out a more workable solution later. That's what I'm going to trust in. Okay. So
So speaking of social media giants that are actually coming up with something innovative, so Facebook, their deal is they want engagement. They want to give people a reason to come and stay, which means having good content. And they
figure out that was a sarcastic comment or not.
No, that's true.
I feel like it was. I'm not sure.
But their whole deal right now is they're trying to like they've realized that their newsfeed is not getting quite as much. People aren't staying on Facebook because the newsfeed's not as interesting as they want it to be. So they're trying to figure out ways to make sure that it stays interesting. And they've realized that one thing that really burns people and gets them to leave is clickbait. They hate clickbait.
Dude, we figured that out a while ago.
Yeah.
Remember? That was our whole first half of the year. Every single title was a clickbait title.
I know.
Because we noticed, oh, look at this. It drives clicks. Let's do that.
Well,
and then we started to be like, wow, this kind of feels forced.
Yeah, this is dumb. We're dumb over it.
It's no longer fun.
Well,
that's how way Facebook feels.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like, this is awesome. We're getting clicks. Life's great. And then they went, oh, this isn't fun anymore.
Yeah, because it turns out that people get bored of it. They know it now. And what's actually worse, the worst thing that happens to Facebook isn't that people get clickbait in their article and roll their eyes and keep scrolling. The worst thing that happens to Facebook is people click on the article and then close the tab and move on to a different website because they associate clickbait in their timeline with Facebook. So Facebook has decided to write an algorithm that can identify and censor basically clickbait out of your newsfeed.
Wow.
And they're like, they have all these different criteria that they're talking about where they're basically like, yeah, anything where it's, you know, it doesn't give you the pertinent information that you need to come up with your, you know, to understand. It's the first category includes so-called curiosity gap headlines. The classic, you'll never believe who tripped and fell on the red carpet, for example. The second includes headlines that seek to mislead you, such as headlines that says apples are actually bad for you when the article reports they're only bad for you if you eat several every day.
Wait, okay, so this is interesting. I have a couple thoughts. I don't even know where to start. Okay, so I've taken like copywriting classes, and the thing they tell you, the most important thing is your headline, to the point where they're like, you should spend more time on your headline than you do the actual article. Because if your headline isn't any good, the rest of your work is useless.
Like, wow. Interesting.
All right. And there are certain people out there, I would say like MG Siegler is one of them, where he's just a natural at writing headlines. And it's funny, you actually talk to him, and he tells him, he's like, eh, about half the time I actually come up with a headline and go, ooh, that sounds pretty good. I'll write that down, and then I'll try to make up an article to go with the headline.
Jeez. I mean,
yeah.
Makes sense, but...
Yeah, and so that's honestly one of the reasons why he's so successful. He goes, I'm just good at that. For whatever reason, his brain thinks in terms of headlines. And he goes, and I write just good enough to fill in the rest of the gaps. So it's critically important. And so in the copywriting classes that I've taken, they like you just said, curate a curiosity headline. Like every single thing they tell you, they're like, yeah, this is how you write a headline.
Right.
And so this is potentially going to be as big as like the Google Panda thing or, you know, whenever they go through and do like, we're going to do these big update things. And, but how they implement it is my other like, okay, that part's really hard. I get tech meme where their feed is slow enough, I guess, where they can have a person kind of curating it and making sure that each headline works. And you can tell the ones where they've messed with it because it's just like this long descriptive title.
Right.
To the point where you're like, cool, don't have to read the article anymore because the title said it all.
Which is kind of their point, right? I mean, that's their whole thing is we want you to come here and we don't want there to be any confusion when you read the title.
And so they're doing the work for you.
Right.
I love it. And that's cool. And because they're like, yeah, the article's good. The title does not help. Like there's times, especially like the corporate blog ones, where they'll be like, an update from Twitter.
Yeah.
Great. And then they'll go in and read it and then summarize the update for you.
Yeah.
There it is. So But like I said, tech meme, they have an feed. That's it.
Right.
Facebook happens to have more than one feed. They have how many now? 1.7 billion feeds?
Yeah.
So
quite a few. Like,
how do they determine someone saying, oh, I'm creating a natural curiosity gap headline versus someone where it's like, no, this is clickbaity?
Yeah. That's a
and it's so subjective too.
Yeah, except I will say this. I feel like at least you can agree that there's a big difference between an effective tease and a clickbait.
Clickbait.
There's like,
yeah, I agree.
There's a it, how you
there's the there's those things like you'll never believe or you won't believe or I mean there are certain stuff that you'd be shocked by.
Right.
Certain keywords, I guess, that they can at least start with and getting rid of. I thought right. It was funny too that people were complaining that Facebook wasn't going to tell people their magic algorithm for defining clickbait.
Right. And
I was like, yeah, because it's going to change every single day, just like what Google's is. They don't tell you their search algorithm.
Right, so you can't game it.
And it's like, honestly, they could tell you it, and an hour later, it's obsolete.
Right, because...
And that's why.
They want to prevent people from being able to game it, and... People will test out everything they can to try to generalize what the algorithm is so that they can game it, in which case the company has to respond by changing the parameters again.
I kind of love that doing this. Like, I wonder, like, at one point in time, if Facebook ever sits down and is like, dude, did you know that we just created a few million dollars worth of book sales with this little change?
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
Just, yeah. I don't, right? All these new trainings are going to come out.
Right,
how to
right.
handle Facebook's change.
Well, and
the
I will
rules
say,
have changed.
I will say this, and from a user perspective and an author perspective, the nice part here is that their whole goal is to increase engagement. Basically, say when you read an article title, if you click on that article, you're going to come back because you enjoyed it, you liked the experience. And you found it on Facebook, so you're looking for other quality content on Facebook.
Yeah.
That's what they're trying to find. And so
it's like the antithesis of the Snapchat NFL deal.
Exactly. And so
it's about the user. Say,
so for the user, you end up with this place of you get better content more consistently based on just the titles, and you get better titles. And as a writer, you're going
Dude, that just
to
means there's gonna be how to articles everywhere.
I know.
And those are the
yeah, right. And what you're going to find here is...
what?
Listening to a radio show, and they were talking about this story. they were giving example clickbait titles. One of my favorite was... Check out this list of 10 awesome things. You'll never believe number 5 is a boob. Yes. Yeah, that's about it. I think the thing here is that ultimately, like, yeah, it's kind of weird asking the question of, okay, what is a clickbait title? What do they think a clickbait title is? How do we make sure we're not doing that? But the goal isn't to like come up with some, oh, clickbait's bad. No, what they're saying is basically write a good article that delivers on the tease. That's the big thing that they're really trying to get from you is don't write an article that doesn't deliver. If you come up with a great tease, have a great article. Because if people come back to Facebook afterwards, Facebook's going to be like, fine, this isn't clickbait. Clickbait, I think, is the biggest definition of clickbait is that the tease is not delivered upon. And that is really what they're trying to do is get rid of the, you know, fight against the formula of clickbait titles so that only quality content gets through. And, or at least I hope that's what they're doing. I guess it's possible that they really are dumb enough to just try to figure out the formula of clickbait titles without addressing the broader issue.
Well, knowing how SEO works, probably that one.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's a good point. But they do seem to at least be acknowledging that the problem, the real problem they have is that users don't like the content on their newsfeed, and they're trying to figure out how to how to tweak it in a way that people will be more excited about it.
Or is this just a cloak and dagger way of saying we're going to start charging more for you to share your stories again? Tailing over last week's episode of them trying to figure out a way to make more money.
Yeah, it might be.
Might be. Okay. All right. Well, I'll have to. The other thing you do is just don't visit Facebook that often, and then all you see is your friend updates whenever you come visit.
That's a good point. The other...
That's how I roll. Works every time. All right. So apparently document editors are a thing again.
Like Word?
Like Word document. So okay. Two pieces of news. Remember Quip? We've talked about them a few times. They were a word processing document editor thing that worked on your smartphone, your tablet. Eventually they came out with something for your desktop and a web version. It was kind of like Google Docs, I guess. and then also this week, Dropbox announced that they've got an Android and iPhone version of their document editing app called Paper.
Yeah.
Which is all about collaboration for documents and creating checklists and different embeddable things inside of it. I just like, did I miss something here? I don't know. I felt like this was figured out. And essentially the answer was Microsoft solved it by making Word pretty darn good. Yeah, you got to sign up for 365, but it's good.
Yeah.
Unless you want to do light editing stuff, in which case, yeah, Google Docs works fine.
It's an interesting question, because it does feel like a solved problem. And I will say this, I use different document editors for different stuff and different platforms. It's like, really? For my personal writing, I use Pages. For business, I use Word. For anything collaborative, I use Google Docs. And I wonder if I'm the sort of use case that these companies are getting to, because the UI of all of these things are almost identical. I mean,
I know
the overall functionality, which makes you feel like there should only be one. But I wonder if the design language has gotten to the point where companies like Dropbox figure, hey, we'll just clone the basic functionality of Word and everybody else, and then add our little twist, which is it works with Dropbox.
And, yeah.
Which Microsoft already does.
I know, right?
Yeah. And I think what you end up with is this place where it's a pretty low bar to entry to create a document editor. And if you feel like you can bring something to it and it fills out your overall ecosystem of applications and stuff, you're like, why not? What's the harm in adding it? Especially because they don't evolve much. So if you put in a lot of time up front, build a pretty stable platform, it's not like something, it's not like a social media thing where you're going to be constantly chasing
comments.
Yeah.
Once it's done, it's not broken.
Exactly. Yeah. You're not going to be chasing new features and stuff. You'll just add your little feature, especially if you have a long-term goal. And so I feel like companies, that's where they are with text editors. It just, everybody builds one, because why wouldn't you? Somebody might use it, and it might endear them to your ecosystem even more. And cool, we'll move on. Because that's the other thing, is it's like, I want to know that, like, especially something like Dropbox, I keep coming back to them. They kind of make sense where it's like Google says, well, we've got our, what's it called? Drive. We've got the Google Drive where you can do everything that Dropbox does, and it's fully integrated with a productivity suite. And Dropbox, like, look, if there are people that are choosing between us and them and want to know who has the larger, more filled out ecosystem, well, we don't want them to feel like they have to buy Word in order to sync with our drive. And I think that's where this is being moved from, is you're watching the proliferation of documents.
Doing some competitive, which I think Salesforce is the same way, where they're watching Microsoft buy companies like LinkedIn and Skype and going, they're creating a CRM thing.
Right.
Maybe we should create an office suite.
Right. Yeah.
and maybe that's what's happening, and where this is the first step of a few that we're seeing. And I think too with Dropbox, they're starting to realize like storage is a commodity all of a sudden.
Right.
How do we become more than a commodity? How do we add value to it? And they tried carousel with photos, which didn't work. And now they're saying, all right, office environment, they spend money. Let's go there.
Right.
Which is what HP is doing.
Yeah. It's what everybody's doing. It's always good to be chasing the lead. That's a good place to be. Why come up with the next thing?
Okay. That's all I had for that, I guess.
Yeah. That's interesting. It's cool.
Yeah, it is. It's just a timing thing, but it's kind of, so I guess it's not like, okay, this thing's back. It's just, it's where we're at. Like I like what you said. Pretty easy to make, an easy way to add value and fill out your platform a little bit.
Yeah.
Your ecosystem.
Speaking of your ecosystem, Apple has an ecosystem of hardware, their computers. Have you ever gone to the website? Oh, great. I got to click through a couple of times to get to it. It's listed right here. Mac Rumors Buyer's Guide.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Yeah, so
before you buy anything, you go there.
Exactly. For those of you don't know, what they have is they have a list of all of Apple's products and sorted into different tabs, and each product is listed into one of three categories.
iPhone is a caution? Are you joking me?
I know. Well, it's broken
That's
into
a don't buy.
It's
obviously
broken into one of four categories. It's buy, neutral, caution, and don't buy. And basically that's based on two things. Number one, how long it's been since the last time they upgraded it. And number two, what's the average time for upgrade? So for the iPhone, for example, it's perfect. Its day since release has been 331. The average days between release is 379. And it ranges from 357
like up
don't
to
467.
Buy to me.
Yeah. So basically what they're saying is you were within 40 days
I could wait a month.
Yeah, of an update. Yeah, which is just definitely true. It's coming in September. Like, everybody seems to know that. The iPad,
see, their iPad mini, they've got it as a don't buy.
Right. Of course, it's 20 days from the average refresh time.
The nice part about it is they're transparent enough about it that you could be like, okay, their caution thing's dumb, but I can figure that out based because they tell me everything.
But where it gets a little disconcerting is in the Mac lineup, the MacBook, which is their latest one.
Don't buy
that one. Was released 100. Yeah, that one was released 110 days ago, and on average, it's every 375 days. Which I don't know how they came up with that, because it seems like it's only been released once. So I don't. But basically, it's only been out for 110 days.
No, they had the original MacBook.
Okay. Sure. So, but basically, it's a good one. It just got updated. It's time to buy that one. But the iMac has been out for 299 days without an update. The Retina MacBook Pro has been out for 446 days with an average of 268. So it's been around for almost twice as long. The MacBook Air is up to 517 days. The Mac Mini, 661 days. And the Mac Pro, a whopping 962 days. And don't forget the plain old Mac Pro without a Retina display, 1,518 days since its last update. That one's just never getting another upgrade.
Yeah.
So the big question that kind of everybody was talking about this week was basically, should Apple be selling four-year-old hardware like they are with the original MacBook Pro, or three-year-old hardware like they are with the Mac Pro? That's so painfully out of, like, even at its highest, most insane expensive levels, is so woefully out of pace with everything else that it's embarrassing, frankly. You know, what the heck is Apple doing with their computer lineup right now? Specifically their high-end stuff, their MacBook Pros, their Mac Pros. Everybody seems to ignore the Mac Mini as a real sore spot too, which is frustrating to me as a Mac Mini guy. But
why? Isn't this great news for you? Yours is still current.
I'm wrong. Yeah, you know what? That's a good point. That actually is a good point, because I bought mine probably 600 days ago. I bought mine right after that one came out, and it's
So you timed it brilliantly. That's what that's how I read that. Unless you're looking to update it.
No.
Is that your... Okay.
I'm not. I'm actually pretty happy. But it's just... Did. It's an interesting question to ask.
I love it. It has recent rumor articles next to it. This is an awesome webpage. Yeah, it's, every time. It's so helpful.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good. But so... Yeah. They have a fleet of computers that... So, and this is one of the most frustrating things, especially with, like, your MacBooks and the Mac Pro... And honestly, frankly, the Mac Mini as well. None of these computers can be upgraded once you buy them. They all have chips and RAM and graphics cards soldered to the motherboard. So none of these things are upgraded once you've bought them. And so the big question everybody's asking, it's like, it's not just that, you know, it's one thing like with the Mac Pro where you couldn't upgrade it afterwards. That was really frustrating because people were like, what happens if in 3 years I want a more powerful computer? I'm going to have to buy a new one. And that Apple's answer is yes, you'll have to.
Yes.
Now, 3 years later, they're realizing we can't even buy a new one because there aren't new ones available. You're not using the most – you're not using the state-of-the-art technology. AMD and NVIDIA have both released new architectures in the last year that are just amazingly faster and better at lower power usage and stuff. And Apple was just ignoring that those exist. And I've heard people make the argument that it's like, if you really look at the Intel chip compared to other chips, do they really need to be upgrading the Intel chips every single year to keep up with it? And, or, you know, is there a really that big of a benefit from that? And the other hardware, like, you know, I can't believe a company with $200 billion in cash assets can't manage to just update their stupid computers every year to a year and a half. Like, how, seriously, what is going on at Apple? What's the strategy here? What's the logic behind that?
Well, they're not selling to you and I. They're selling to people like Jesse, who she doesn't care. She doesn't go to this webpage.
Yeah, okay, I kind of get that. But this goes back to the argument that we've made. We've had this argument before when we talk about, is Apple ever going to stop selling the MacBooks? And the reason why we always come back to no is because they're an engineering company. They engineer products. Yes, their primary goal is to sell easy-to-use mobile devices to the masses right now. That's what they're trying to do. But they use their own computers to do that, to design those things. And, like...
They're good enough to do their own stuff.
I don't believe that. It's just like the Mac Pro is an embarrassment when it comes to, like, if you wanted to do a high end analysis of solid modeling design and stuff, finite element analysis, the Mac Pro couldn't handle it. Not like the newer computers, like a newer graphics card could. And I don't understand, man. I don't understand. And the other weird part about this is that a lot of these other product cycles, they don't, you know, it's this isn't normal. They don't normally let these things go on for as long as they've been going on. They used to update them more frequently. It seems like all of a sudden, all of these things have been put on hold in the last 3 years. It's like they're changing their strategy and they haven't told us what's going on yet. And I'll be honest, like, there's a bit of a hesitation. If they upgrade everything in the next year, it's like, I don't know. And I realize that I've been on kind of the VR kick this last year, and Apple's refusal to acknowledge that that's a product category that they want anything to do with is kind of frustrating to me. But I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get what the logic behind it is. Why not keep these products up to, you know, the biggest complaint with the Macs with Apple has always been that they don't have the most advanced hardware, yet they ask for some of the highest prices. And which I'm like, okay, that was one thing. This is completely different. You're just not upgrading your systems. Like, why not? I don't understand, James. Help me understand.
I don't know if I have a good answer for you. I'm trying to think how I would logic through it. Because I agree with you. On one hand, it's like, just don't... on one hand, they like to have stories to tell. And they do their big events, which is their form of marketing and advertising and stuff like that. And so they want to always be able to tell you, oh, look how awesome this stuff is. And if they just made it a point to upgrade all of the processors every year, that would just be one less thing they could talk about, I guess, and talk about speed improvements and stuff. Mm. And so maybe that's what it is. Though I get it, where they could always say, yeah, well, whenever you buy it, you got the latest. This is the coolest. And then they'd always have something. I honestly, man, I loved, it was that one year, I feel like it was in 2007, where, well, I think that was the year, where they released something every single Tuesday.
Yeah, every Tuesday, either an announcement or a press release.
I feel like that was the iPhone year.
Yeah.
That they did that, because that was on a Tuesday, and then they actually released the phone on a Tuesday, and it was just like, it was this thing every single Tuesday, something new. Yeah, some big, some small, whatever, but it was a press release every single Tuesday. That was it. And that was fun. That was a super fun year. And it was just like, you could, I don't know, it worked. And that was probably one of the hardest years internally, is my guess. Because you had to have it all figured out kind of a year ahead of time to make that work. Otherwise, there were probably some months where they were scrambling because something was behind. And they're like, no. We have to have something on Tuesday.
Right.
It's coming in 2 days. What do you have by Friday?
Right.
Type of thing. And so I can imagine that was just horrendous. And you get that sense, too, of like, okay, we're the biggest, we're the awesomest. Maybe we can relax a little bit and enjoy what we've earned, kind of retirement style. And maybe that's what's going on, where they're like, you know, these multiple product release cycles are a lot of work. What if we just had one? And, you know, kind of going down that path, I don't know. There was a part of me originally, I was thinking, well, maybe in the context of seeing the iPhone update every year, these ones seem slower. But yeah, I look through the dates. There's, for some of them, it clearly is a slowdown. I also, my thought was, well, maybe they just can only devote so many resources to certain projects, and therefore the MacBooks aren't getting the focus. But then you're, like you talked about, they have so much money that should not be a problem.
Right.
But even if they're putting which makes you think, maybe they're focusing on something different completely, whether it's a
car.
Building or a car or AR or something, in which case, but I'm still like, don't these teams still keep going?
Yeah, I don't understand. It's funny. I get the idea that, you know, you don't necessarily need a new computer every year. Like, it doesn't need to be a new complete design. Just update the processors, update the graphic card options. Like, that's the sort of thing that a reasonably competent engineering team should be able to do. And then every once in a while, I have Johnny Ives and his team of designers come in with a gorgeous, you know, design and change everything and make everything more difficult. But it just seems like, I don't even know. Like, why at this point don't all these computers have Force Touch? Like, you've got it on a couple of the computers. Why not just upgrade? You built it into the MacBook Pros.
See, I'm shocked that the MacBook Air still exists.
Yeah.
To me, I've been like, dude, drop that thing from your product line. Just get rid of it. Who cares? Yeah, you're going to miss some sales or whatever. But that, to me, is another, like, if Jobs was around, which I know he's not, and he was told him not to run the company like his way, but if he was around, that product wouldn't exist anymore. He'd go, no, it looks out of place. It's weird. We're cutting it.
Yeah, it looks old.
Done.
It looks bad compared to everything else. Just the screen looks bad. I don't like walking into the Apple store and seeing that blight.
Yeah, so I could, so that definitely is something that's changed.
The other piece of this, and this kind of comes back to what I was saying earlier of what if they're just,
dude, don't tell me this. I'm doubling down on like HomeKit everything. So like,
I know
it's not the conversation I want to have, but
well, whatever. This is, you might've gone the right direction. Apple's new ad really wants you to believe the iPad Pro is a full computer. So they
Boom.
Got a new ad, and it literally, like, the question
yeah,
that it
really?
Asks is, just when you think, what do you know a computer is? You see a keyboard that can just get out of the way. I'm watching it while I read this. And a screen you can touch. And even write on with your Apple Pencil. It basically just being like, it's a classic. They're talking about it. They're just using a different word. They're all of a sudden like just they're not even saying, by the way, the iPad is actually a computer. They're like, no, this is it's an interesting ad campaign because you can tell that they've decided to rebrand it as a they've made a huge decision to rebrand it as a full blown computer, and they find an advantage in that for some reason. And the ad just kind of assumes that we're all up to date on the fact that, oh yeah, this is obviously a computer. We've always thought it was a computer. Like, what? What are you talking about? To me, it comes back to the thing of I get the feeling that it's a company that's moving away from professional computers. And I don't know what comes next because they need professional scale computers. Other than opening up the hardware and doing something else with the operating system and just letting the OS X become something else, just becoming completely a mobile computer company, mobile operating systems, period. And because in a lot of ways, the only real limitations of iOS is that you don't have root access, which means you can't write your own software and execute it on the very device. What?
Yeah, that's not the only thing.
But, okay. What else?
Well, I mean, like right now on my desktop, I have a browser open with 4 tabs. I have another browser window open with us doing this video chat. I have a document open that I'm taking notes on, and I have a folder open that has the sound that we're going to play at the end of the show. And on another screen that's hidden off to the side, I have Line In, which is rerouting audio from you and me to another program, Audacity, that is opening, recording it. And I have the preference pane open for the sounds, for the system sound, so it'll also feed it into Audacity and into your ear.
Okay, so massive
multitasking.
I get
multitasking.
I agree. I don't know. It's a weird company right now. They're doing weird stuff. They're really good at updating their mobile line and keeping the mobile line up to pace and super impressive.
Do you get that sense that maybe they're going through an identity crisis right now?
Yes.
Where it's like, I mean, it was pretty clear one point in time they did computers.
Yeah.
And they called themselves Apple Computer. And then when they came out with the iPhone, they're like, okay, clearly there's something beyond this. We're going to be doing phones now. And they knew that the iPad was on the way. And so they dropped the Apple Computer. And the phone sales took off to a degree that they couldn't even fathom. And they really enjoyed the run. And they loved all the developer attention. And they loved what the funds let them do and their buying power and the things that it let them get involved with. And then they said, all right, we've kind of had this hobby out there called an Apple TV. Maybe this is now a thing that can help us make some inroads into the home along with the Siri thing. They obviously saw that wearables was a thing and got into the watch game. But I find themselves, and they kind of had positioned themselves as, we're the intersection of the liberal arts and computing. But like, no, that's not it anymore. And I don't know. I honestly don't think they should continue to try to chase the growth pattern. I think that would be a massive mistake on their end. I think they should go, we were so lucky to be a part of it at this time, and we fully recognize that we're not going to get to see that again, which is why we've saved up these billions of dollars so that we can go back to a normal size and it won't hurt. And I hope that's the case.
Yeah.
It's rare that that's the case, that executives think that way. You know, I don't know. They strike me as a company that's just saying, all right, we're not really a computer company. We're not really a phone company. We do this software and hardware thing, but what's our focus? And it's not just if they came out with this product, it would suddenly make sense. Right. I don't know. It's like they've lost their, what is our point outside of making products that look cool?
Right.
And for the most part, work.
I agree. And the thing that really gets me is that they're spending an insane amount of R&D money and they're not coming out with products.
I do not represent HPI, but I work for a company that struggles with that.
You know what it reminds me of?
We're making products to make money, and that's not a good place to be.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of Microsoft under Steve Ballmer. Where they would have these really cool, like, they were spending a ton of money on R&D. They'd have all these really cool projects they were showing off and being like, their research labs were like, these things are great. And then they just would never launch the product because it didn't make sense in some really hard to understand business strategy that they had concocted over the course of years. And then Satya Nadella came along and was like, we've got a bunch of great products. Why don't we just launch these products and see what happens? And that's what they've been doing for the last 5 years, since Satya Nadella came along.
I've heard that argument with NHP, where someone will say, this is a really cool product idea. We think that it's going to be worth $100 million a year. And they go, that's less than 2%. That's rounding. No.
And I wonder why companies don't just say, hey, be self-sufficient. It's like when Google cuts a product because it's not self-sufficient, that makes sense. But anything that's they're like, we're going to give you a lot of leeway to try something out. And if it becomes self-sufficient, cool. If it doesn't, and it becomes clear that it won't, then we'll stop. But as long as you're growing at a reasonable clip and we have expectations that you will eventually become self-sufficient, that's all that we really need.
That was the other frustrating thing and I know for a fact that this happened within HP. I had a guy where he had a project that he was helping to do. It was a brand new thing within HP. And they did their initial forecast on how big they thought the program would be and what the growth rates would be. And they presented it to his first level of people or whatever. And they went, yeah, this looks cool, but it will never get approved at this level. Add a zero on the end of it. And so they did.
What?
And then, shocker, guess what happened? It
failed to meet expectations.
They got the approval. And then they started out going to get the sales. And they were, could you believe it, a tenth of what was said in the presentation. and he was so frustrated over the entire thing because he said, we were slightly ahead of our original forecast and growing rapidly. He goes, yeah, we were never going to hit this 10x number, but we were doing something that people liked and that caught on. And in our original stuff, we're like, yeah, we're not going to replace the ink business. Duh. Just like Apple should come to that conclusion with the iPhone. We're never going to replace the iPhone business. We may get lucky, but let's not think that.
Yeah.
let's think in terms of the Mac business size, perhaps.
Right.
And so they killed the program, his thing that he was doing. And cause they went, well, it's not returning what we thought it would. And he was like, well, it's returning what I thought it would. And was so frustrated that he was like, why do you even tease me to let me do the program if you're going to stick me to these unrealistic? Cause you know, the initial hope was, oh, they wouldn't kill it if we're showing growth and we can at least show that.
Right.
But again, it wasn't the size that they wanted. And that's a real thing where they're like, man, that's a lot of resources, a lot of people. And I agree with you, right? Where this was a thing where they were making, it was already a few million dollars each quarter. It was like, this is cool. We can do this. And more than likely was funding the people and the activities. And more importantly, supports the broader ecosystem,
right,
of printing. And that was the part that got me. I was like, wait, this is a program that encourages people to print?
When, yeah,
like, continuing down this path, you do know where our money comes from, right?
Right.
And yeah, just super crazy. So
I
fear that that's the route that they're going down.
I get the Jobsian idea of I'm as proud of the things that we say no to as the things that we say yes to. But that was said in the context of a company that was actually small. This is now an enormous multinational corporation. Like, you can say yes to an awful lot, large range of products and give them all the time and devotion that each one deserves. The problem that Steve Jobs is trying to avoid was don't miss things because you're stretched so thin that you can't do it. You can't cover all your bases. That was the point of that. Say no to good ideas so that you can focus on the greatest ideas. Well, how can they possibly not have all of their bases covered? Like, what is Apple doing? It just, I don't know. It's frustrating. And I need to see more than just a refresh of all these product lines in over the next before Christmas. I'm or really what? Of Apple, all of their different.
Yeah. You said you really need to see it, or what?
Or like before I can be like, no, Apple's going in the right direction. I have a positive outlook for the next 5 years.
For me, it was like, were you going to buy a Microsoft Surface?
Well, honestly, like if I'm at the point where I am right now, like the next computer I want to buy is a Windows machine so I can do VR.
Mm.
You know,
okay.
that's
a big deal.
That's where I'm at. And
that's a big deal.
I know. I agree. And I want to get to my VR update of the because there's some exciting stuff going on. But
all right. Cool. So, enough Apple bashing.
Yeah, come on, Apple, get it together. So this is kind of cool and exciting because we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and Tesla's been saying they want to buy SolarCity, and they said that buying SolarCity makes sense. They made a case for it over the last month or so.
Yeah, they did.
And then this week they finally said, look, we're going to buy SolarCity for $2.6 billion.
Oh, my gosh, that's so awesome.
Yeah, so just this is all part of the master plan part two and part one, as they originally specified. Basically, encourage everybody to have solar cells, and SolarCity was created. I'm not exactly sure how it worked, to be totally honest, but it was like a bunch of Elon Musk's friends that all sat together and decided they wanted to start a electric car company and a solar company. And somehow he started they both got started at the same time, but kind of almost accidentally became different companies. And it just kind of made sense that they wouldn't be the same company at the same time, but they all shared a lot of the same goals and concepts.
Well, so, and that and like Elon Musk, not only is he the chairman of SolarCity, he's the largest individual shareholder of both companies.
Right.
Like, as far as he's concerned, he's like, it's the same.
Yeah, exactly. He's basically the biggest difference between SolarCity and Tesla, as far as he's concerned, is that he's the CEO of Tesla and he wasn't the CEO of SolarCity, which he's clearly tired of not being the CEO of SolarCity. So instead of becoming the CEO of SolarCity, he just bought SolarCity from himself largely.
I guess Square couldn't afford Twitter. I was like, Jack Dorsey, that was your solution, dude.
I know. Yeah.
So awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. It's official.
It's official. It's happened.
Oh, I'm so pumped to get solar someday. I have some friends who just got it. I'm like, oh man, I'm jealous. I need a new roof first, but
I really want it. I really want a Tesla like real bad. I'm so excited about their cars right now.
You gotta get a job, dude.
Oh, jeez, dude. That hurt.
Facebook.
Right to the heart.
Work for Tesla. Just work for, oh, better yet, get in with SolarCity.
Oh.
Right now, it's time to do it.
That
Where are they located at? I don't even know.
They're a SoCal company.
Okay. All right.
But, yeah, pretty cool. Speaking of companies becoming one, so Uber wanted to do business in China. China was not thrilled about that. So they started a subsidiary that they owned called Uber China.
Yeah, that's right.
And they were pumping tons of money into Uber China to try to build up their ride-sharing company. But at the same time, Didi was an actual, like, Chinese company doing exactly the same thing and was doing quite well. Companies like Lyft were just getting pummeled and have basically no presence in that market. So you had these two giant competitors that were both investing huge amounts of money trying to beat the other one. And turns out last week they finally admitted aloud that neither one thought they could beat the other, but they could definitely hurt each other enough to make it not worth it. So instead, they decided to turn it into one company.
Wow.
Yeah, which is kind of confusing because exactly how it works, because technically, so Uber owned Uber China.
Yeah.
And they, sorry, I got a text message, got distracted. So they owned Uber China. Uber China then got bought by Didi. Uber still wants to stay involved though with this whole thing. So they got a bunch of money from Uber for Uber China, but they also got a bunch of stock from Didi. So they're now partial owners of Didi and,
yeah, like 20% or something, right?
Yeah. So now they're combining different management portions and stuff. So basically this is the weirdness of doing business in China. China was like, no, we want Chinese companies to be doing this. So now it's all Chinese companies again. The Uber that we know and love is kind of out of business in China. They're not doing anything directly other than the fact that they own a huge portion of Uber, of Didi. Apple, turns out, was actually one of the big reasons why this deal happened. When Apple made their billion-dollar investment or whatever ridiculous amount of money it was into Didi, like a couple of months ago.
Oh, that's right.
That was when Uber was finally like, okay, if Apple's going to fight us, I guess we got to figure out how to do something about this. So that was one of the tipping point. It was one of the big factors leading up to this was Apple thrown in with Didi and,
this is going to be an interesting case study to see how competitive Didi remains in China versus Uber and Lyft in the U.S.
Yeah.
Because I know that's one of the fears now. It's like, well, yeah, with no competition, why innovate? Why have better prices? Why get more drivers?
Right. Which is rough if you're Chinese. I will say this. As somebody who has taken Chinese taxi cabs, there's no way this can be a worse situation.
Okay.
It's a terrifying, terrifying adventure. Calling a cab to the airport. I don't know. It's fascinating to me what's going on here. Because, I mean, you know, it's like, what is China doing here? That's the big question to me. Because cabs are – this is such a contentious issue in France because they're a socialist country. Technically, China is a communist country. So you'd think they'd be protecting the taxi companies that are in there, but they're not. They're like – letting Didi go wild and do their best thing. But like you said, is this going to be bad? Who's this going to be bad for? I don't know. It's fascinating. I'm really looking forward to watching this over the next couple of months and years. But Uber's going to refocus. It's also one of the big questions that people are asking about Uber is, you know, is this admission that in certain markets, they're going to start not necessarily exiting, but start partnering with companies that are already successful there, like India, like France. You know, is there a different strategy that they can use where it's not going to cost them billions and billions of dollars to probably eventually lose? And
hey, you know, if that's the case, that's smart on their part.
Exactly. So I don't know. Fascinating. Speaking of VR, which is what our like nick of time this week in VR. I'm pretty excited about this one. Valve announced this week that we have the structure. Valve created a piece of software called Steam, and Steam, in combination with a bunch of technology that they pioneered and licensed, allowed HTC to manufacture their virtual reality hardware. So HTC makes the hardware using Valve's technology and their software. This week, Valve announced that they're going to be opening up parts of their licensings for their VR and how it works, particularly 3D tracking. So there's different strategies that everybody uses. PlayStation 4 or the PlayStation VR and Oculus use a camera that tracks LEDs on the headset. PSVR actually uses colored LEDs, whereas Oculus uses infrared LEDs. But the HTC works a little bit different, where it has what they call the lighthouses, which are actual little devices that you attach to fixed positions in your room, and they send out pulses of lights, these signals that cameras on the headset can use to calculate its position in 3D space. And what's really cool about this is that instead of the camera having to track tons and tons of different LEDs and try to keep track of where everything is, this allows each device itself to keep track of its own location. And it allows more and more peripherals to enter the fray and be tracked in 3D space. So they are opening up this technology, and in a pretty exciting way. They're talking about how the largest value for our customers and for Valve will come from allowing Steam VR tracking to proliferate as widely as possible. A third-party company called Triad Semiconductor sells the sensors directly, although Valve is offering a dev kit with 40 sensors, circuit boards, and two official Vive base stations. While Valve suggests people could one day build their own version of these two, for now, these base stations are required for the tracking. So they're basically like opening up the world to their 3D tracking and stuff. And
sweet.
Yeah. And there's some really cool things that go along with this. Like, number one, they're saying it's actually, I was like really excited about this, and I started looking into it immediately because I got some ideas. It turns out you have to pay $3,000.
Like Kickstarter ideas?
Yes. Yes, James. But it turns out you got to pay $3,000 and go to one of their seminars before they'll give you any of the... Yeah, right? I'm going to Boston on Wednesday. That's the problem.
Where are you?
Good maybe point.
Working on your Kickstarter campaign.
Make up your mind, Matthew.
That's it. Kickstart the $3,000 and whatever the expenses are to go to this thing.
That's actually not a horrible idea.
Boom, there you go. You're welcome.
I'll send out a tweet with your name if you donate $5.
Boy, I might make that a little higher.
I know, right? this is really cool because what it means is they're basically saying, oh, once you do that, though, you pay the $3,000, you end up with the ability to use this technology where you just have to buy the sensors. You can buy directly from this company, integrate them into whatever piece of hardware you want to build, and then you can sell that. You don't actually need permission from Valve, which means that if you wanted to make your own 3D, VR headset to compete directly with the HTC Vive, you could. But if you wanted to make a peripheral like a gun that can, you know, is a more accurate representation of like a rifle that you can do 3D tracking with, you can. You can also build all the 3D models that can be imported into the different, you know, games, just like with the HTC Vive handsets. They're basically open sourcing all these things. What I really want to build, this is my idea. I want to have a keyboard and mouse in virtual reality, which I realize sounds super lame, but I have been in love with the idea of just having my desktop environment be in VR. I think that's a really cool idea. And especially if you have like different inputs that you can just plug into your computer and it can pipe those inputs into your VR environment. So like you could plug your Mac into your VR environment and then you'd have your big screen in front of you. But the trick is like once the headset on, you can't see your keyboard and mouse, right? Well, all of a sudden, you'd be able to do that. You could have them be tracked in 3D space, just sitting in front of you wherever you move them. And I'm like, and you could also do things like when you press a button, the button would press in the VR world. And the hardest thing about keyboards is when your fingers get off by one step on accident, which is what the little like nubby things on the buttons are. But I'm a very visual guy. So I think what you would do is you'd put like, you could just put like touch sensors in each of the keyboards. This is going to be an expensive keyboard.
Sounds like it.
But that way, when your fingers rest on it, you can see what fingers, like which keys you're resting on before you press on it. I feel like you could build a really, like with this technology, you could build a really solid VR keyboard peripheral. My girlfriend came up with a brilliant idea. She was like, guitars. You could do VR guitars really easily, tracking them in real time. And we were talking about it, and we came up with the idea.
Kickstarter idea.
I know, but hear this out. You could have like a you could have a virtual reality training for like teaching you how to play guitar, where you could literally be holding the guitar in 3D space. It'd be there, and like your virtual assistant tutor, who is Les Paul or whatever, and he could like point to like which fret you should be like physically lean in, and you can see where your hand is on the fretboard and like where the fret should go.
Or at least highlight them or something.
Yeah.
Though, instead of having a creepy robot person pointing.
No.
At you.
See, I like the idea of the virtual Les Paul James.
Oh, okay.
This would be good. But you know, I like
Wii Fit trainer. Yeah.
Cool. See, but this is the idea where like you can, I don't know, it's one of those things where all of a sudden the sky's the limit. It's completely open up, and this is the reason why I'm a big fan of a company like Valve, because
dude,
like,
I see. I don't know. I listen to that and I go, that's an AR application right there. But
James, you're totally missing the point.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's fair.
My bad.
That's see, fair
I,
enough.
I'm
that's...
like, I think AR is the future, I'll be honest.
Do you? Are you ready to commit to buying some hardware?
Oh, yeah, I am.
No,
maybe not. Wait, what?
Because you can buy the bleeding edge of... augmented reality right now, and guess what? It's not that expensive.
Really?
It's not that expensive. I mean, no, it's actually really expensive. Oh. So I have to spend $3,000 to go to this training session in Seattle at Valve. You are going to have to spend $3,000 to get your Microsoft HoloLens, but anybody can get one now.
Kickstarter.
These seem like Indiegogo type campaigns. I feel like they have a lower.
Fair enough. Yeah, you keep no matter what, right? That's the one I want.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, and they just
get me halfway there, okay, guys?
Exactly. They don't have any like. There's fewer moral conundrums that come along with Indiegogo. In a blog post today, project head Alex Kipman said that all developers and business customers in the U.S. and Canada can now order up to 5 HoloLens dev kits apiece instead of going through an application process. It's taking orders through the HoloLens website, requiring only a Microsoft account. And, of course, $3,000
per headset. I got one of those.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, so you can just go ahead and buy it now.
Microsoft. Like I'm a paying Microsoft customer. I got 365. Like I'm legit.
Actually, kind of. Should I do this right now, James? On,
yes.
Live on air.
What are you gonna do?
I'm gonna buy a HoloLens.
Do it.
Add to cart. I can't do it.
Really? Why not?
Yeah. Because.
Like you physically can't or mentally can't.
I mentally can't.
Oh, okay.
I have a sense of how much money I have right now, and I.
You
feel
could
like
do a review.
Be...
You could review it.
Giveaway. Actually. James. Just had a brilliant idea.
We're not quite that generous, I
know,
I don't
right?
think yet.
No. Well, it depends.
But I like where your head's at.
Yes. Oh, like I all part of the yeah, get that VR going.
What
AR.
If okay, brilliant idea right here. Could you do a Kickstarter for a giveaway? Where like we're gonna buy a HoloLens and give it away? Join the Kickstarter. Every dollar you put in is a ticket into the pot.
I feel like that's a gambling website.
Yeah, you're probably right.
once again, seems like an Indiegogo campaign.
yeah, you're probably right now that you said that. It's a good idea.
It is a good idea. Lotteries are a really good idea, James.
Yeah, and you just make it where it's like, yeah, anyways, we're good.
So, yeah, just kind of moving through this a little bit quickly. So Watson, the IBM created artificial intelligence that most people became familiar with because it was really good at Jeopardy, still is. Yes. They wanted to turn it into, the reason they call it Watson is because they named it after Dr. Watson, the medical professional.
Elementary, my dear. Oh.
Assisted him. What's his name?
Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes. Thank you. Yeah. So Watson, this AI, they're having a hard time diagnosing a woman. And so they fed Watson a bunch of her genes and Watson correctly diagnosed her based on other information as somebody having leukemia, and they were able to successfully treat her and save her life. The reason this is a big deal is because it's the first time that Watson diagnosed somebody that the doctors couldn't, which is really like the goal for Watson.
That's awesome.
Is to turn
That's
it
so
in,
cool.
It is really cool. Is to turn it into a diagnostic tool, and their hope, what they consider to be like just a good bar, would be that it's as good as most doctors, so that it kind of gets all the low-hanging fruit of diagnostic stuff and can give feedback to doctors who are also coming up with it. So this is kind of a big deal, the idea that it actually, like, but the high hope is that, yeah, it'll be able to diagnose stuff that even really good doctors can't come up with.
Do you know how badly this would ruin TV shows like House?
I know.
Where it's like, because that's like the entire concept of the show is we have a bunch of symptoms and things. Let's all sit around a room and guess, and then we'll try treatments, and then we'll guess some more.
Yeah.
If you can tell, I'm not the biggest fan of House. And
you know,
you just be like,
the way you
let's
just
type these things
the
into Watson. Oh, here's what they have. Okay, cool.
You don't like House?
No.
I love that show.
He's a little abrasive.
Yes.
And again, it's this concept of let's guess. Brilliant.
Well, but they're educated guesses, James.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's it.
He's just like, he's just like Sherlock Holmes. He's the Sherlock Holmes of the medical world.
No, Sherlock Holmes does not guess.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. He kind of does. He gets it wrong. That's part of what makes it fun, is he gets it wrong from time to time. And
everybody's from time to time.
But he's always 100% sure. Like, that's such a good show. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah, whatever. That's fine. You're entitled to
being right. yeah, okay. So the last story I wanted to cover was, so what's it called? Which company? Which school is it? I can't remember what school it is. Princeton, Harvard, MIT, one of those guys. One of the schools I will probably go and visit this next week. They have announced that they've developed what is called a high fidelity quantum logic gate. What that actually means is when you're building a quantum computer,
Oxford.
There we go.
I won't go visit that one.
Probably not. I'd like to, but I won't. The high fidelity quantum logic gate. So usually with logic gates, you're in a traditional computer, they're made out of transistors and they're quite accurate. Like they only mess up very, very, very occasionally. And you have to build in, error correcting into your circuitry to fix when there's some sort of a broken transistor or whatever. And they can put up with a certain amount of errors and still have an accurate working computer. This is true of all computers. Quantum computers are similar, except they have a different type of logic gate. And one of the things that they've had a really hard time doing in the decades of development with quantum computers is having a high fidelity quantum computer. So okay. It's accurate enough where with reasonable error correcting, you can still have you can get what they call quantum acceleration, which is for problems that quantum computers are particularly well designed for, they can solve them insanely fast compared to a traditional computer. And so far, everything out there, like the D-Wave that Google has, they're able to program it and test out different theories, but the errors are so high that they don't get the quantum acceleration. So they know it's working as a quantum computer. They just doesn't actually run fast like it's supposed to. And so this is a really big deal because this is the first time that anybody has gotten above the 99% correct. And it's been thought that you can actually start to handle the errors once you get one out of – once you only have one out of every 100 computations is an error, you could theoretically have error correction built in and start to achieve real quantum acceleration. These guys developed a logic gate that has a 1 in 1,000 errors, which like – is slam dunk territory. So this is a pretty big deal. There are some limitations to what they built, unfortunately, particularly that they're using trapped ion hyperfine qubits. I don't actually know what that means, other than that is a particularly non-useful form of quantized qubits.
Yeah. Such dumb names.
I know. It's really...
Let's be real. Come on. Clearly a bunch of scientists came up with
it. Yes, this is not good advertising. But yeah, so the trapped ion stuff is unfortunately it's not directly translatable. It's not like they discovered this and then next week they're going to go to manufacturing of full-blown quantum computers. But this is a pretty big deal in that it's the first time we've ever seen this sort of high fidelity quantum computing, and it definitely can lead to more development. So, you know, you're starting to go from the quantum computers are decades away to quantum computers, like actual useful quantum computers, are years away. And once that happens, man, it's going to be all bets off. Because
that's exciting.
Using a quantum computer to tune a
fish.
Not a fish. No. a neural network. You can do it lickety split. So you can create enormous, complicated neural networks, simulations, smarter and smarter machines, end of humanity, that sort of thing. So pretty exciting.
Cool. That is exciting. Awesome. Well, dude, that's all we got.
All right. I liked it.
A lot of good tech news this week. Excellent. And everybody else, thank you so much for joining it. And thank you for listening to episode 254. Man, we really do appreciate it. Three things before you take off. I don't know why I just did three fingers into the screen. That's cool. anyways, number one, don't forget to check out the show notes with all the links, furlobros.com/254. And if you want them sent directly to you, you can do that too. On that same page, on the right-hand side, there's a place where you can put in your email address and we'll send them right to you. And then finally, this podcast is supported by listeners just like you. If you'd like to contribute, we have four different levels. You could be a fanboy, a nerd, a junkie, and a maven, each of which have their own different levels of reward. And so you can learn more about that on furlobros.com as well. So everybody, thank you for joining us. We really do appreciate it. And let's see here. I am James Furlow. My gymnast running, fencing, ball bouncing brother, plus many more, who is trading Brazilians of dollars, is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time.